Strange Studies of Strange Stories.
The air blew off the mountains, filling the air with fine ice crystals. It was too cold to snow. In weather like this, wolves came down into villages. Trees in the heart of the forest exploded when they froze. In weather like this, right-thinking people were indoors, in front of the fire, telling stories about heroes. It was an old horse. It was an old rider. The horse looked like a shrink-wrapped toast rack. The man looked as though the only reason he wasn't falling off was because he couldn't muster the energy. Despite the bitterly cold wind, he was wearing nothing but a tiny leather kilt and a dirty bandage on one knee. He took the soggy remnant of a cigarette out of his mouth and stubbed it out on his hand.
"Right," he said. "Let's do it."
"That's all very well for you to say," said the horse. "But what if you have one of your dizzy spells, and your back is playing up? How shall I feel, being eaten, because your back's played you up at the wrong moment?"
"It'll never happen," said the man.
He lowered himself onto the chilly stones and blew on his fingers. Then, from the horse's pack, he took a sword with an edge like a badly maintained saw and gave a few half-hearted thrusts at the air.
"Still got the old macaroni?"
he said. He winced and leaned against a tree.
"I'll swear this bloody sword gets heavier every day."
"A talking horse? Now I've heard everything."
"I tell you what, I about had a heart attack when that happened. It's unnatural, and that's the very sort of thing we're cursed with reading about here at Strange Studies of Strange Stories. I'm Chad Pfeiffer.
And I'm Chris Lackey. We're at strangestudies.com and Patreon.
When I say curse, I mean curse. A lot of people don't realize there's a whole backstory to this podcast. Long ago, you and I discovered an unnatural artifact and are now compelled to study these strange tales. I'll be adding new details to this absolutely true backstory in the new year. Revelations you won't believe are exciting. Secrets revealed, then arrested. Horrific truths uncovered, then covered up again for later. Please keep listening in 2023.
Yeah, we have to say goodbye to 2022, but we can't yet say goodbye to Terry Pratchett. So we're doing this short story, Trollbridge.
Of which we heard the opening paragraphs at the top.
Trollbridge came out in 1991 for a collection called After the King, Stories in Honor of J.R.R. Tolkien.
This story is in the Discworld setting. It happens after the events of The Light Fantastic, which is the second book in that series. The second of 41, exclamation point.
Wow.
Who was that reader?
That was Greg Johnson.
I heard an internet rumor a couple of weeks ago that Greg has an Etsy store.
He does, and it's full of magic. He's got food farm flyers, Woody Brown t-shirts, Lunge Dolphin books, Mintsman Christmas jumpers. Greg even does custom jobs.
Those food farm flyers are really funny, and the framed ones would be perfect for decorating a kitchen, which is going to be my angle. Americans think 100% of that stuff is real. What do we have here? Tomato loaf, smoked mango eggs, beef and tractor coronation brownies. This guy's been to England. Malt fairy pudding? Why can't I get that stuff here?
You can get Greg's stuff anywhere, and we'll link out to a shop in the show notes.
Thank you, Greg, so much for rejoining our party. Now, this story was in an anthology of stories, as you said, in honor of Jolkin, Rolkin, Rolkin, Tolkien. And trolls figure prominently in Middle-earth. There are trolls in The Hobbit that serve as some comic relief. Yeah. Remember that scene, Bilbo and the dwarves are captured by three trolls who want to eat them, but Gandalf uses a little creative ventriloquism to get the trolls arguing about the best way to cook them until the sun comes up, which, you know, when the sun comes up, it turns them to stone.
Yeah.
Trolls are from Nordic folklore originally. They got adapted pretty heavily into English folklore, but it's a pretty ancient creature. The predominant characteristic of trolls, they live out in out-of-the-way places, isolated areas of rocks, up in the mountains, caves. There's a cave troll in Fellowship of the Ring, which is an awesome scene in that movie. Most of the time, they're ugly. They're kind of dumb, grotesque even. Some of them are huge. Some of them are small. Some of them just look like regular people.
Mm.
They just happen to live out of the way. I think they're sort of like hicks in some way. In modern parlance, a troll still lives like in a basement, you know, basement dwelling, online instigators, or even just like public provocateurs we call trolls now, people who care more about causing conflict than the content of what they're saying. Today's story is called The Trollbridge. However, seeing that title, I imagine that it's going to be a riff on Three Billy Goats Gruff. Do you know that one?
Are you familiar with that story? It's a tale as old as time.
Did you read it in school, or do you remember
it? I think I read it to my kids.
Okay, so that's one of my earliest memories, is reading the children's book version of that. But all I really remembered were the illustrations, which were like cut out felt pieces arranged. I didn't really remember what it was about, so I looked it up again. Tell me if this differs from what you told your kids.
All right.
Yeah. There's three billy goats that are brothers.
Yep.
They live in this sweet meadow by a river. Lots of grass, lots of cool water to drink, but they eat up on all the grass. It runs out where they live, so they have to cross this river to get to the meadow on the other side. There's a wooden bridge, and under the bridge, there's a hideous troll. And they know that troll's going to eat anybody who crosses the bridge. I thought there was some toll to pay or something.
No, not in the story that I know. But continue. You're doing great.
He's just... Okay. Well, the billy goats are of three different sizes. There's the smallest, and then the mid-sized one, and then the big guy.
Yeah.
The smallest billy goat, he crosses first. He's stopped by the troll, who says he's going to gobble him up. And the goat says, check it out. My big brother's coming along. Don't eat me. Eat him. He's bigger. That'll be more of a meal. And the troll says, that sounds great. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Medium-sized goat comes next. He does the same act. He says, look, don't eat me. Eat the next guy. He's bigger than me. The troll says, that's cool. The largest billy goat gets to the bridge. Troll stops him. And the largest one just fights him.
Yeah.
The troll says, he jumps up, let's do it. And then he just rams him and knocks him into the stream. He's carried down the current and he's drowned.
Uh-huh.
And from then on, the bridge is great. All the goats are able to get to the meadow happily ever after.
Yeah.
I could not puzzle what the heck that story, what is that supposed to be about?
Is it a lesson to the troll to not wait for something better, just take what he's got?
Is that what it is?
That's my guess.
But why is the troll the hero that learns that lesson and then dies? It was so weird. Because I think you're right. The troll got punished essentially for having good impulse control, though. In one respect, you know that test with the marshmallows. You can have one now, or you can wait till I come back in the room and have two. And then the kids that eat the one marshmallow go on to have like terrible lives. And the kids that wait for the two become doctors and lawyers and stuff in that study, right?
Yeah.
And this is like similarly, the troll goes, oh, something better is coming if I wait. And he does that.
Well, you know, the thing with that impulse control, I think there was some re-examining of that study. We're totally on a tangent here.
That's
fine. Tangent of a tangent. But there was a study that a lot of that has to do with how much those kids trust adults.
Oh, I'm sure that's true. But nevertheless, I felt like the troll got punished for doing something that is a good idea, which is, you know, maybe hold out a little longer for something better if you can.
I disagree. I think it's a bad idea. Obviously, proven in the story. But he had a little goat he could easily have eaten. Why not eat that little goat when the next goat comes? Eat that one too, or kill it and save it for later. Like, what was this whole idea about letting it go by? Why trust the goat to begin
with? Well, why are the goats rewarded for selling each other out? That's that also.
Well, the plan, I think, was the big brother is going to be able to kick this troll's ass, so we'll just pass it back.
But the way that every version, because I looked at a few versions of the story, they never cleared this with the big brother. You know what I mean?
Right.
They just came up with that on the spot, and then he showed up and had to fight the troll. I would be so mad.
Yeah.
Well, it's a complicated story to begin with.
It is.
And then this story is kind of a riff on at least the concept of trolls under bridges. But that's why you would think that trolls live under bridges. It's because of that story, which is pretty old. There's a Norwegian version, and then the Billy Goats Gruff is the English version of it. This story today that we're covering, the Troll Bridge, also riffs on Conan the Barbarian, obviously, as we'll see. Also the Arthurian hero quest myths like Sir Gawain and the Green Knight, or the various battles of Sir Gareth and the knights that he fights.
Mm-hmm.
That idea of like, I gotta go meet this guy at a crossroads and conquer him in order to continue on my life's path. We've been off on enough non sequiturs. Let's get to the story.
Right. Now, as you heard at the top, our story begins with this guy talking to a talking horse. In a cold, mountainous region of Discworld, the horse is old, the guy is old. The guy is Cohen the Barbarian, and his full name is Genghis Cohen. And he's in other Terry Pratchett stories. He's Discworld's greatest hero and has stopped many threats over the years. The story doesn't say how old he is, but in the book, The Life Fantastic, they say he's 87. So he could be older than that in this story. Even though it's cold, he's just wearing a leather kilt and a bandage over one knee because he's that badass.
Yeah, that's tough guy stuff right out of the gate. It's cold here right now, and I'll wear a leather kilt and bandage, but just to run out and get the mail. That's it. I come right back in. Not like this guy getting on a horse and riding around.
Yeah. Cohen laments buying a horse from a wizard.
Yeah, that's the reason it speaks. A funny way to explain the horse, though. It says, I looked at your teeth, I looked at your hooves. It never occurred to me to listen. Who do you think was bidding against you, said the horse.
The horse asks why he doesn't just retire with all the gold that he's earned over the years. And Cohen says, no treasure. Spent it all. Drank it all. Gave it all away. lost it, which is kind of similar to Conan, because there's so many stories where Conan gets some great treasure and the next story he's still slumming it.
Yeah.
Because basically, you know, drinks it, gambles it.
Well, that's his weakness. That's what it makes me feel better about Conan sometimes, is that he has no impulse control. So,
yeah,
you know, he's awesome in all ways. But then as soon as he gets his treasure, he just turns into a drunken buffoon.
True.
It's like, I can relate to that.
Cohen says he didn't save for his old age because he never thought he would reach it.
Every time they said the name, it made me think of the singer Leonard Cohen.
Yeah, me too.
Really? Okay, yeah. Good. It wasn't just me. Out there in a kilt.
Cohen tells the horse that he doesn't plan on dying today, but he might get lucky. He quotes his father saying, "Son, when you face down a troll in single combat, you can do anything."
So that's what this journey is all about. The whole time, the horse has been saying, "We could go rimwards. How about it? Nice and warm. Get a nice warm place by a beach somewhere. What do you say?" Which is the equivalent of like the kids in the vacation movies wanting to go to Hawaii instead of whatever insane thing Chevy Chase is trying to get them to do.
Uh-huh.
Cohen has done much over his long life, but he feels that besting a troll in combat, that's what will really show he's tough, according to something his father said a long, long time ago. Which is kind of funny that even in old age, he's still trying to impress his dead father.
Now they look down over a huge gorge and see that there's an old stone bridge going over it. The horse wants to know, what's the point of killing a troll? And he says, a dead troll, that's the point. Anyway, I don't have to kill it, just defeat it. One-on-one. Mano a troll. And if I didn't try, my father would turn in his mound. The horse wants to know why they've come all this way just to fight a troll. Got to, said Cohen. When did you last see a bridge with a troll under it? There were hundreds of them when I was a lad. Now there's more trolls in the cities than there are in the mountains. Fat as butter, most of them. What did we fight all those wars for?
There's this sense that fighting a troll is part of an old world that's falling away. That's mm-hmm. something that you used to be able to do quite regularly. So he's got to get his one last shot in. It's a little like using that last phone booth in the city or eating at an automat. Or shopping at a Sears. You know, there was one of those in Santa Monica that was falling apart.
Yeah.
I think there's only a few of those stores left. And you go, oh, I'm going to go run around in there. And it looks, or going to a mall right now is similar to that. It's got a little bit of a post-apocalyptic feel.
Yeah.
It's like one Cinnabon and a bunch of shuttered stores. And you're waiting for the zombies to come out.
Cohen sends the horse across the bridge on its own. A troll jumps out from under the bridge, but just as it notices the saddle's empty, it feels a knife at its neck, and it's Cohen.
I have to admit, I was a little like, how is this old, tired man? They set up that he's having trouble breathing. Mm-hmm. He's got a bad back. How's he going to beat that troll? And then when he pulled this, I smiled to myself. I nodded and out loud said, ah, trickery.
So the troll pleads with Cohen, explaining he's just doing what trolls do. It's a tradition. He looks over his shoulder and he says, bloody hell, you think you're Cohen the Barbarian, do you? What do you think? Said Cohen the Barbarian. And then at that moment, the troll realizes, oh my gosh, that actually is Cohen. And he's delighted. Cohen on my bridge? Wow.
That's where we shift into the sketch comedy world, sort of, in a good way.
Yeah.
This was a traditional warrior versus troll relationship. And then it shifts to celebrity and fan. Oh my God, this absolute legend is on my bridge. Mm-hmm.
The troll gives up and says he just wants to have his family come up and see him because nobody's going to believe that Cohen the Barbarian was on his bridge. The troll complains that his wife is always talking about his brother-in-law who has a new wooden bridge. And the troll introduces himself as Micah and shakes Cohen's hand. He leans over the bridge and he yells for his wife to bring up the kids. He turned back to Cohen, his face glowing with happiness and pride. Micah, the troll, explains his wife wants to move away, but his family has been there for generations.
There's always been a troll under Death Bridge. It's tradition.
So a huge female troll carrying two babies shuffled up the bank, followed by a tail of smaller trolls. They lined up behind their father, watching Cohen owlishly. He introduces his wife, Beryl, who is utterly unimpressed by Cohen.
I think I've been on the receiving end of that one when I've met somebody who listens to the show and their significant other who doesn't. You know, the ones like, oh, wow, yeah, Ghost of Frankenstein's monster and all this stuff. And the other one's like, where are we eating soon?
And then he introduces his son, Scree. He explains to his son that they have a real hero on the bridge, not just fat, lazy merchants with loads of money.
Obviously a dig at the brother-in-law.
Beryl asks if Cohen has lots of money, but Micah says, that's not the point. He's a hero. She sees this as zero coins.
Mm-hmm.
And Scree asks, are you going to kill our dad? Of course he is, says Micah. It'll be an epic story about a great hero. Cohen tries to explain that he doesn't actually plan on killing him, but just stops before he does.
But that's funny that Micah's willing to die. Micah's like, finally, I'm going to be a character in this epic story.
Yeah.
It's cool, man. My kids are going to see that I passed away at the hands of this great hero.
Mm-hmm. Now, Micah says that his father told him stories about Cohen, that he bestrides the world like a colossus.
Which is a quote from Shakespeare's Julius Caesar. Why, man, he doth bestride the narrow world like a colossus, and we petty men walk under his huge legs and peep about to find ourselves dishonorable graves. Men at some time are masters of their fate. That's Cassius trying to convince Brutus to murder Caesar. It's not exactly a complimentary thing that he's saying.
Beryl says he's just an old man. If he's so great, why ain't he rich? So she says, this is what we've been waiting for, is it? Sitting under a leaky bridge the whole time, waiting for people that never come, waiting for little old bandy-legged old men? I should have listened to my mother. You want me to let our son sit under a bridge, waiting for some little old man to kill him? That's what being a troll is all about? Well, it ain't happening. Pyrites doesn't get little old men. He gets fat merchants. He's someone. You should have gone in with him when you had the chance.
It's hard not to hear this all in my head, the wife yelling at him as a Monty Python sketch.
Oh, right.
Sounds like the mother in the beginning of Life of Brian or something like
that. A fake falsetto kind of.
Yeah,
how
yeah.
How are you doing there? Cohen interrupts Micah and Beryl and takes Micah aside. And as he does, Beryl yells at him. Don't you hang about talking to your no good friends. Now they're friends. Today's your day to go down to the sawmill. You know, Church said he couldn't go on holding the job open if you weren't taking it seriously. I think for me, this is where it kind of sunk in. The story is sort of about having a dream, like a dream job or dream destiny. Like you want to be some kind of artist or a poet or a sports person or whatever. Something in your life that you want to have, but you're having to deal with the mundanity of life while trying to attain this great thing.
Mm-hmm.
But Beryl's right. He's got a family to support. He made choices that don't support this dream job of his. And the kids come first. And he's trying to straddle two horses. And, you know, that just doesn't work.
There is definitely the aspects of he needs to give up on a dream for sure. But the dream, it's a little less of a pie in the sky kind of thing, and more that he's clinging to an old world. You know, this bridge has been in his family for generations.
Mm-hmm.
So this vision for the future that he has is one that's based on something.
Yeah.
It's what his forefathers were doing. It's just that future has fallen apart. So, you know, he's dreaming about the past, and he's Cohen is grasping for the old world as well now that he's getting old.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of comedy that comes out of this because it does play like a sketch, but it has a deeper theme, which is you mentioned a second ago, you know, now she's calling them friends.
Yeah.
This man that's here to kill him. But this story, I do think, has that deeper theme about old rivalries and negativities, how time and the passing of time wears them down.
Mm-hmm.
In the end, these two foes have more in common because they're old than they have reasons to fight.
Yeah.
You know, time is their common enemy. And so there is a bit of a depressive mood as the story is they get into complaining to one another. But overall, I felt like there's a positive message here, the human connection of it,
mm-hmm.
how you can get over the, you know, sort of the drama of youth to repair relationships with people.
Mm.
You might have a high school rivalry and you think, God, what was that even about?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're older people with kids now just trying to get through the day to day.
Yeah.
It's that kind of thing.
Beryl leaves with the kids and Cohen confesses that he actually didn't plan on killing Micah, just throw him over the bridge and steal whatever it is that he had.
Mm-hmm.
Micah confesses that he doesn't really have anything to steal. Even with a nice bridge right. like this one, people just don't use it anymore. His wife tried to get him to go into business with his brother, but his family has been trolling this bridge for over 500 years.
It's kind of interesting that they, you know, the horse assumed that Cohen had a lot of money because of his adventuring past.
Yeah.
And Cohen assumed that because it's a nice bridge that this troll had a lot of money, but he's more like nobility. You know, he's still got the rank, but he doesn't have the money to support it.
Uh-huh.
And these assumptions, how that just happens in life.
Yeah.
Suddenly you get old and go, wait a minute, I didn't save anything.
Now, this bridge stuff doesn't make much money. He has to go down to his brother-in-law's mill 3 times a week just to make ends meet.
Mm-hmm.
He explains that his brother-in-law with the bridge, another brother-in-law, has a toll booth set up and doesn't even maintain it himself. He has hired a dwarf to work the booth. His brothers-in-law keep telling Micah that times have changed and he needs to adapt.
What's wrong with being a troll under a bridge?
He said.
I was brought up to be a troll under a bridge. I want young Scree to be a troll under a bridge after I'm gone. What's wrong with that? You've got to have trolls under bridges. Otherwise, what's it all about? What's it all for?
It's a great bit of dialogue because what he's saying literally makes no sense, really.
Yeah.
Or he's not attempting to answer the questions he's asking.
Uh-huh.
But it's also so understandable. And there is a tension. He's not just a dreamer because there is that in some situations, the conservative non-risk viewpoint works out, you know.
Uh-huh.
What if running this new bridge that his brother-in-law, what if that failed,
mm-hmm.
you know? He didn't go in on it because he was like, people want the old bridges still. And maybe in some instances, his brother-in-law could have been like the crypto guy.
Sure.
You know, this is where currency's going. And he goes, you know what? I'm going to stick with my dollars and pounds. And then the crash happens. So he's on the right side of it in another story. Yeah. But in this one, he's failed to adapt.
Yeah. And Cohen laments that the whole land has changed. There are farms everywhere. Nothing against farmers, but there just didn't used to be so many. And there was so much more unspoiled land. Micah says his brother-in-law with the mill bought the Cutshade Forest, killed all the giant spiders in there, and is now planting spruce trees.
That really affects Cohen. I used to like that forest. It was, well, it was darksome. You don't get proper darksome anymore. You really knew what terror was in a forest like that. This comment reminded me of, I was talking about how New Yorkers missing the porno theaters in Times Square. Uh-huh. This is just like that. What he's describing is a horrific thing. Menaced by giant spiders and really knowing what terror is. And he's nostalgic for it. And it's the same thing.
Yeah, it's really funny to think about how they are nostalgic. And some people are like this too. Nostalgic for when things were worse.
Exactly.
Progress has been made and they're like, oh wait, I don't like this.
Yeah, it's that you used to have to go in there and kill them one by one. You're saying that they killed all the spiders all at once. It's not even fair.
Micah says that his brother-in-law said that replanting would make it easier to sell the land. And there's a long pause while Cohen digests this. Then he says, you can't sell Cutshade Forest. That doesn't belong to anyone. Yeah, he says that's why you can sell it.
Yeah, wow.
So sad. Cohen seems very sad and a bit disappointed. He asks if Micah fought in the old wars, and he did. It was supposed to be fought for a bright new future and law and stuff. That's what people said. Well, I fought because a big troll with a whip told me to, said Micah cautiously. But I know what you mean. And that's really the point. This is exactly this bright new future of law and stuff. It sounds like they've got it. They've got more farmland. They've got less spiders killing and eating people. It does sound like this great future.
Yeah, although probably, is it a great future or are people just being victimized in different ways?
Oh, it could be.
I feel like that's two sides of Cohen got sold something, and that's why he fought. Somebody sold him things are going to be better or whatever, bright new future. And then the troll was like, well, somebody just whipped me to do it. But both of them got coerced one way or the other. I think that's astute.
Well, Cohen leaves and we get this.
About half an hour later, Cohen's horse emerged from the gloomy woods onto a bleak, windswept moorland. It plodded on for a while before saying,
all right, how much did you give him?
12 gold pieces, said Cohen.
Why'd you give him 12 gold pieces?
I didn't have more than 12.
You must be mad.
When I was just starting out in the barbarian hero business, said Cohen, every bridge had a troll under it. And you couldn't go through a forest like we've just gone through without a dozen goblins trying to chop your head off. He sighed. I wonder what happened to them all.
You, said the horse.
Well, yes, but I always thought there'd be some more. I always thought there'd be some more edges.
How old are you? Said the horse.
Dunno.
Old enough to know better then.
Yeah, right.
Cohen lit another cigarette and coughed until his eyes watered.
Going soft in the head.
Yep.
Giving your last dollar to a troll.
Yeah.
Cohen wheezed a stream of smoke at the sunset.
Why?
Cohen stared at the sky. The red glow was as cold as the slopes of hell. An icy wind blew across the steps, whipping at what remained of his hair.
For the sake of the way things should be, he said. For the sake of things that were.
Cohen looked down. He grinned.
And for three addresses. One day, I'm gonna die, he said. But not, I think, today.
The air blew off the mountains, filling the air with fine ice crystals. It was too cold to snow. In weather like this, wolves came down into villages. Trees in the heart of the forest exploded when they froze. Except there were fewer and fewer wolves these days, and less forest. In weather like this, right-thinking people were indoors, in front of the fire, telling stories about heroes.
That's the end of the story?
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes you think, too, about, you know, what does a fighter do when the war is over? The warrior has no war anymore, so where's your place? Where do you belong?
Yeah, it's an interesting theme that's been explored in other kinds of mythic literature. There's the great Tennyson has a poem about Ulysses when he's retired after his whole travels across the world, dreaming of one last mission, which is somewhat the basis for Star Trek II, starts with a similar premise. You know, now that you've been promoted, don't you really want to be out on a starship still having adventures?
You know, in the book Interesting Times by Pratchett, Cohen becomes emperor of the Agadian Empire. It was his retirement plan, but he got bored and left, and he ended up stealing a horse from a Valkyrie and eventually flies off into space, never to be seen again.
Well, that's how to end a hero's story. Awesome.
And Cohen also has a lot of illegitimate children because he, like Conan, you know, hooked up with a lot of ladies.
Right, right.
I think quite a few of his illegitimate children show up in the Discworld series.
Oh, that's cool.
And there's this amazing short film version of the story that's pretty much word for word the whole thing. And it's made by this company called Snow Gum Films, and it came out about 2015. And it's totally worth a watch. It's low budget, but looks really good for low budget.
Yeah, we can link out to it on YouTube. It was a direct adaptation of this. You're right. I watched it last night. It's about half hour long and really well done.
Yeah.
What does he mean when he says, I got three addresses? That went over my head. Why'd you give him your last dollar? And he says, for the sake of the way things should be, for the sake of things that were, and for three addresses. Then I didn't know what that meant.
I don't know what that means either.
Oh, okay, good. I thought maybe it was something obvious that I was missing.
No, no.
Well, it's interesting to read this because you know what it made me think about was this has a lot going on that happens in sketch comedy, even though it's a piece of short fiction. This is actually a great example of how to do it because a lot of sketch comedy is simply taking the rules of one interaction or social type of situation and putting them in another. You see it happen a lot with novice sketches where it's an AA meeting, but for something else.
Right.
It'll be like, welcome to the Cannibals Anonymous or you know, whatever, and then it plays out. But when it's done really well, I'd say that great Key and Peele sketch where it's the inner city teacher in the all-white high school who is using the mispronunciation of all the white names is that like a really elevated version of that, but it's basically the same premise. Here, we've got the hero adventurer and the troll that he's supposed to defeat, but then they start talking to each other like kind of two retired old guys trying to figure out the world. And it's funny because we recognize it.
Yeah.
And it makes it unique. It's a great technique to use as a writer, I think. You can do various versions of it, but it's a great way to think about something.
Also, this the theme of just getting older and the world changing, and it's something everybody going to have to deal with. Well, I mean, if you're alive, if you're living, you're going to have to deal with the world changing, places change, people change, everything changes. Especially the older you get, the more of that change you're going to see and the harder it's going to be for you to find that place in the world.
Yeah.
And that's something, you know, even like badass Conan like dudes will eventually get old and not have a place anymore, not feel like they belong.
Yeah, and that and an examination of that is one of my favorite kinds of things. We joke about those types of things on the show constantly because it's interesting to have a story or a mythology as a background and then examine the mundane aspects of it. So you wonder, you know, what happens when Conan gets older? He doesn't have a retirement plan. If he survives everything, he's just going to be an old dude. Mm-hmm. What's that like? Or, you know, we talked about Dracula making the chicken all the time, making a joke about that. But, you know, you could use that as a jumping off point for a piece of interesting fiction. Maybe Dracula learned that recipe when he made it for his first love. And she died in some awful way. And then he made that recipe and poisoned it to kill the person who had caused that death.
Oh, wow.
He's made it year over year over year over year in different adventurous circumstances until it no longer has any meaning to him. So when he serves it up to Jonathan Harker, it's a metaphor for his overcoming of grief and slow descent away from humanity.
You just blew my mind.
See what I mean?
Yeah.
As a technique.
You know, I saw somebody on the weekend that was a fan of Dracula, but doesn't listen to our show. And I was able to tell them about, I go, you know, Dracula was in his castle all by himself. He didn't have any servants. And they're like, oh yeah, right, right. Who made that chicken? And they look at me and they start thinking about it. And I go, Dracula made that chicken. They go, Dracula made the chicken? I'm like, Dracula made the chicken.
Think about it. But I'm always wondering about the behind the scenes things. You need the adventure tale in order for those things to work. But I do love them. And I love the small details about things and just new ways to think about, you know, that troll, that is the troll's job.
Yeah.
Presumably the troll, they do come from somewhere. So they have to have families. Trolls traditionally in folklore have families. That's one characteristic of the trolls. They do have like clans.
All right. Yeah.
It could be a brother sister pairing or it could be a parent with their children. But that seems to go along with the mythology of trolls. As elastic as it is, that's a characteristic.
Yeah.
I finished that troll movie that I talked about in the last episode.
Did you watch the whole thing or did you just skip?
I did watch the whole thing. Well, I did a little skipping, but It's pretty fun. Yeah. One thing is that they say that the trolls got cleared out of Scandinavia because the church bells drive them crazy.
Oh, right. Yes. That's part of the legend, too.
So one weakness of trolls is bells. And so they had an interesting sequence where they had helicopters with giant bells dangling from them that they came in after the giant troll with in the movie.
Yeah. Where do they drive them off to?
Oh, I don't really know. They're making it somebody else's problem.
Oh, okay.
See, that's what we really needed to get to in this episode.
The Norwegians send it over
to Sweden. The irresponsibility of the Norwegian troll tactics.
They go over to Sweden, buy some beer, and send some trolls over. Beer's cheaper in Sweden. I just want to thank Greg Johnson for reading. Please go check out his Etsy store. You can get lots of great stuff there. It's loads of fun, and so is he. And also check out his YouTube stuff.
Yeah, get into all of it. I'm so grateful to have Greg twice in 1 month. It's a Christmas miracle.
I want to thank some of our patrons, people that support our show.
First among them, I'd like to thank one of our patrons, Ben Mole, who suggested this story.
All right, yes.
Quite some time ago when we were looking for some Terry Pratchett to cover it, fit in with the Discworld theme we set up last couple of weeks. So thank you, Ben.
And I'd also like to thank Mike Larson.
And I'd like to thank Glenn Strong.
I'd like to thank Cubiz.
I'd like to thank Ingolfer Haldorsen.
Lewis Brown, thank you.
Connor Lamping, thank you.
Clay Fourier, thank you.
Thank you, Stacy Swanee.
Joseph Bromley, thank you.
Trevor Schwalm, thank you.
Vanna Stillwater, thank you so much.
Tom Roundell Green, thank you.
Thank you, Max.
Steve Kellett, thank you.
And lastly, I want to thank Ethan Cordry.
You guys are awesome. I hope you've enjoyed this month of fantasy stuff. Next month, we're getting, well, we have a bonus episode still coming up, and I believe we're going to do an episode of Manimal on this one.
Yes, we are.
Been a long time coming. We need to get back to our series on Manimal, so we're going to do that. And then next month, we're kicking it off with some Roald Dahl comic murder story called Lamb to the Slaughter that I really enjoy. So that's going to be a fun one to talk about. And we haven't done Roald Dahl on the show yet, so that's going to be exciting stuff. We hope you'll stick with us into the new year and the next several. I'm Chad Pfeiffer.
I'm Chris Lackey, and you've been listening to Strange Studies of Strange Stories
exclusively on Patreon.
Strange Studies of Strange Stories.